Welcome to the Beyond Intuitive Eating Podcast, hosted by me, Beth Basham. I am a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, and liberated body coach. I'm also a wife and mama to two amazing little people. With over 20 years of experience, I help women bridge food freedom with optimal health using principles of intuitive eating, foundations of emotional mastery, functional medicine, and neuroscience. This is the space where you get to end the war with your body and discover total confidence and true health from the inside out. Did you know there are 5 stages on the journey to becoming an intuitive eater and feeling completely liberated with food and your body? I have talked to countless women who are not even aware that there were stages to this food freedom journey. And by understanding them, it offered them so much relief. Because let's be honest, it can often feel like this path is hard. And we can maybe wonder if it's the right path for us. And this is especially true if we're stuck in one of the stages and we don't feel like we've been able to progress. So in this episode today, I want to break down these 5 stages, and I want to point out some common areas of stuckness that can happen for individuals when they are transitioning between stages. Sometimes this feeling of stuckness can lead to an overall abandonment of the journey and a return to dieting and restriction and calorie counting and honestly sheer misery. And I don't want this for you. So please stick around because I think you're going to be surprised to learn more about yourself, where you're at on your own unique journey, and maybe get some ideas on how to overcome the next hurdle so you can make it to the next stage. In my Peace with Food and Soul method, we use many different tools to overcome these challenges, but let's look at these stages and discover where you might currently fall so you know how to proceed to the next stage. And I do, before we get into this, want to offer some credit where credit is due. These stages are not ones that I formed myself. They come directly out of the book Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Triboli and Elise Resch. If you haven't picked up that book and you're interested or curious about intuitive eating, I highly encourage you to grab it from Amazon, pick it up at your local library, grab it on Audible, however you like to consume material. But these 5 stages are also covered in that book. In this podcast, I'm going to bring my own personal nuance and experience to them. But if you need a written thing to go back to, the book has these stages right inside. Just make sure you pick up the 4th edition. It's the most current at the time of this recording. Okay, let's dive in. We're going to jump right into stage 1. The first stage of intuitive eating is hitting diet rock bottom. It's the readiness stage. It's where I talk to a lot of women who are just starting to embark on this journey. They're at absolute dieting fatigue, and they may or may not be ready to give up weight loss pursuits, but they're starting to lean in that direction because they know that dieting really hasn't helped them in the long run. I'm sure if you've embarked on this journey, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably can relate to this. You're finally willing to, or in the past, you were willing to admit that, you know, this dieting thing, it's just not working for me anymore. And I've had clients come to me and say, I want to do a diet. You know, I really liked it when I was on Weight Watchers. I felt really good. Everything was going really well. But man, the idea of doing that again, I dread it. I just don't think I can do it. I don't want to have to avoid a girl's night out because of what foods might be available. I'm tired of looking at my picture on selfies or on social media and just dreading what I see, right? It's kind of that rock bottom spot where I know I found myself when I was first introduced to intuitive eating. And it's a place where you're just like, there is no other way out. I have got to try something different. And I'm going to point out that our pursuits for health are going to look different to every person, okay? We all have the choice to A, decide if we want to go after health, and B, we get to decide what the definition of that is. Now, we live in a world that tells us this is what health is, this is what health isn't. But when we embark on this journey, we get to take a step back, and this is the best stage to do it in, to take a step back and say, what do I actually want when it comes to health? What is health to me? Is it a feeling? Is it a way I move in the world? Is it about the foods that I eat or not, right? Like, there's a lot of different things that could be added or subtracted from your personal definition of health. But oftentimes in stage one, we take a step back and we might be reevaluating what health looks like us, looks like for us. Is it a body size or is it an actual inner experience, right? These questions are just starting to come to the surface in stage one. And for many of the women I attract into my practice, they do want to be healthy as it relates to their energy, their vitality. They want to see improvements in lab work. You know, let's just say their cholesterol is high and they want to bring it down. Their blood sugars are out of range and they want to bring those back in range, right? But there are a lot of other non-weight-centric measures of health we can look at. And while it's a little different for every person, for most of the women I see and I work with, they still do want that health. They're willing to maybe think about putting the weight loss pursuits to the side, maybe not, but they're definitely at that diet fatigue. Okay, so I can relate to this. I was there many, many years ago, over a decade ago. I had hit diet rock bottom. And I remember having a struggle, having some challenge around releasing that desire for weight loss. You know, I knew at the time that intuitive eating wasn't about losing weight, but in the back of my mind, I kind of hoped and prayed that if I could learn how to listen to my body, right, learn how to honor my hunger and fullness and self-regulate my appetite, that I would naturally lose weight. And if you're feeling that way and you think you might be in stage one, that's okay. You don't have to change that. We don't need to shift your entire mindset all at once, or at all for that matter, because you get to decide what you want for yourself. I truly believe in the desires of my clients. They get to exist along with them in this journey. But I also have discovered that when we retain weight as the primary measure of our success, it's really difficult to move out of stage one into the next stage. Or we might be able to move to stage two, which I'm soon to explain here, but it's extremely difficult to move to stage three if we're really fixated on our weight as the end all be all. I oftentimes tell my clients, let's see what happens. Let's treat this as an experiment if they're, you know, interested in trying intuitive eating on because they've hit diet rock bottom. And let's just put weight loss to the side for now. We can always return to it later, but let's just see what happens if we put it to the side for now so we can really start to look at the emotions around food, the emotions around our body, and really start to understand what it means about us to be in a smaller body, to have lost the weight, right? Because most of us aren't chasing the weight loss. We're chasing the feeling that's expected to come in as a result of losing the weight, right? Even if you are telling yourself now, well, Beth, I need to lose weight to be healthy. Well, I could spend a whole episode on this, which I actually did a few episodes ago. Right around the new year, I dropped an episode about why we may not want to focus on weight loss as our New Year's resolution. But that aside, we really do want to look at what does it mean about me and my health to lose weight? And is that true, right? When we see weight as the problem for our health issues, we're actually contradicting recent research because we're finding that actual fatness on our body does not have the impact on chronic disease that we once thought it did. And it's actually the stigma, the fat phobia and the weight stigma of being and living in a fat body that may be actually more problematic and more of a stressor to our bodies. And that's actually what causes the chronic illness, right? Interesting, isn't it? But I could tell you that all day long. You may still feel deep in your soul, and this is not a problem that you do need to lose weight. But our habits die hard. These thought patterns die hard. And so when we're hitting this diet rock bottom, we know that we can't go on with dieting. We know that it's just not sustainable. We've yo-yoed or weight cycled for much of our lives, we realize like there's just no way I can go on. The biggest barrier to moving to that next stage is a fixation or a heavy focus on weight as the only way to feel better. So if we can put that to the side, it's going to get a lot easier to move to stage two. And there's a few things that might help you with that. The first one is to find a community. Find a community of like-minded individuals who understand you, who might also be at diet rock bottom, and gets this idea that intentional weight loss is not necessarily the path to all things health-related, and surround yourself with those people. Now, this could be an in-person community. You could always do a Google search for a community within your local area. I have a Facebook group. It's called Beyond Intuitive Eating. It's a likely name, right? Since that's also the name of this podcast. You can always search for that and join that group to be in a space with other women that are like you. But in addition, it's important to find weight-neutral healthcare providers at this stage in your journey that can really support you and your desire to pursue your health in a non-weight-centric way. And this might be a provider who doesn't make you weigh yourself every time you go in for a visit, who doesn't fat shame you and tell you that you have to lose weight every time you go in to see them. It might be hiring a dietitian or an intuitive eating counselor who can really help you walk the stages of intuitive eating in a way that's really good for you, right? In a pace that's right for you, that can help you with tools to overcome these stages. I mean, you'll hear me talk about my own programs. I do see clients one-to-one and through group settings. I may or may not be the person for you. And that's not the point of this conversation right now. It's just to invite you to consider this way of doing food and body, this intuitive eating path is something that might be very different than what you're used to, and holding the hand of others, especially providers or therapists or dietitians that understand this, can help you go a long way and help you move up the stages a lot more quickly. So just consider that if you think you're at this diet rock bottom and you haven't yet progressed to stage two. So let's move into that. Stage two is the exploration stage. This is where somebody has said, okay, I can put this weight loss pursuit to the side, even if temporarily, and they start to have a conscious learning and pursuit of pleasure with food. They start to realize, right? And this might be you, there's a heightened awareness. You start to notice subtle hunger and fullness cues. So you notice that hunger doesn't have to be this giant gaping hole in your stomach that says, feed me now or else. It's a light headache, or it's just a little noise inside of your body. It's an impatient feeling, right? When I get hungry, I notice that when my blood sugar drops, I get a little impatient, right? I feel myself just wanting to do something. It's very strange. It's an experience that's difficult to describe with words, but it comes long before I actually feel hunger in my stomach and in my intestinal tract, right? Like that empty feeling. But this is what happens in stage two. We're starting to explore our hunger and our fullness. We're starting to notice, wow, all these self-judgment thoughts. I'm really judgmental when it comes to food. Wow, I look at other people's grocery carts in the grocery store and I'm judging them left and right. Or I am really worried about food. When I go out to eat, it gives me anxiety. We just start to feel this experience and this heightened awareness that, wow, food has taken up a lot of mental rent in my brain, and we really want to shift that. And the actual awareness itself is really freeing, right? When we give ourselves permission to start eating food that we had forbid to eat for years or decades of our lives, we might discover, wow, food is really delicious. And when I eat the foods I enjoy and that I want to eat, I'm creating this neutrality with food. And it's really fun. Like, I really love chocolate. I really love to eat cheesecake. And we start to discern between eating the cheesecake for emotional reasons versus eating the cheesecake to satisfy a source of hunger. Now, there are some common barriers in this explorative stage, okay? Because, and I hear this a lot from my clients, there's a lot of people that in stage two feel like they're actually thinking more about food. They're actually thinking more about eating than ever. And they come to me and they say, Beth, you know, I thought I was supposed to want to eat less, I thought I was supposed to think less about food. I thought intuitive eating was about naturally riding your hunger and fullness and not letting food take over. But in stage two, I want to point out that this is a new skill you're learning. The first time you learned how to ride a bike, right? You had to think about where your feet touched the pedals. You had to think about whether it was the right hand or the left hand that squeezed the brakes or changed the gears, right? There's a lot of thinking that has to happen when you're learning how to ride a bike. But after time and after practice and repetition, you can probably jump on that bike without thinking too hard and get from point A to point B. The exact same thing is true about intuitive eating. This is a new skill. This is a skill that you've likely never experienced, or it's been a very long time. And therefore, it does require a lot of cognitive thinking, journaling, writing things down, right? You might think that you're obsessing about food when in fact you're actually just learning a new skill. In addition, another barrier in this stage is that this voice starts to take over. I call this voice the diet rebel, also found inside the intuitive eating book if you want to read more about this voice. But it's this voice that comes in and says, you know, I'm going to put the middle finger up to diet culture and I'm going to eat whatever the heck I want and I don't care how it makes me feel because I have not allowed myself, I've restricted this food or these types of foods from my diet forever, so I'm just going to eat it all. And this part of us arises and it can leave us feeling almost out of control with food. Because those previously forbidden foods, although we're trying to keep them off the pedestal, we can feel like we're out of control because we've basically set our boundaries. We've set up our autonomy with food and we've said, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm eating this thing. We don't listen to our body cues. We just rebel. We're just rebelling. It's like that inner teenager comes out and they don't really care about the consequences. They're just really focused on the present moment. I'm going to do the thing and I'll worry about the consequences later, right? And this can be a scary thing for somebody who has dieted or controlled their food on some level for a significant period of their life. When this diet rebel voice turns on, it can feel very scary and it can also feel liberating, but when our body starts to change as a result of it, we can instantly fall out of trust, feel out of control, and think that abandoning intuitive eating is probably the way we need to go, right? So I want to call this out because I see this a lot with my clients where this inner rebel starts to take over and we're overriding our natural sense of fullness or hunger and we're letting ourselves kind of be swept up in it. This is normal for most of us if we just let ourselves do it for a period of time. It usually subsides and there's a lot of tools we can use to help talk to this rebel and help this rebel be seen and heard and validated. Sometimes that's all it takes. But the point is that this can be a common barrier to getting to that next stage because we feel like the diet rebel will never go away. If I give myself permission to eat the Oreos, I'm never going to not want to eat the Oreos, right? So like I said, in addition to that, with the diet rebel taking over, you know, sometimes our bodies do change in this process. And those changes may or may not feel good. We see when we have seen our body as a threat for a period of our life, likely the entirety of our lives, and our body does change, which is inevitable. Let's face it, we're all getting older at every moment of every day. Our body will change. But when it changes in a way as a result of changes in our eating patterns, it can feel really challenging. It can also leave us feeling like we should probably abandon this process. Okay. So This is also a stage where we might come back to, because of the changes in the body, because of some maybe feelings of out of control with food, we might slip back into thinking these thoughts that we still have to fix our body. Our body is this machine that's broken and we need to fix it. I mean, that's just a deeply ingrained belief that so many of us have. And in order to break free of that, we oftentimes have to do some deep thought work or somatic work even to break through this stage. And I do this in my Peace with Food and Soul method, but you can also do it with other practitioners. It can be incredibly empowering to work through this to get to the other side. So before I go on to stage three and talk about some more solutions on how to overcome and get through stage two, we're going to take a short break. And we'll be right back. Hey there, beautiful soul. Do you ever find yourself caught in an endless loop of negative thoughts about your body and feel like you're in a constant war with what and how much to eat? If so, you're not alone. Reading a book, listening to a podcast, or talking to a friend may not be enough to help you experience total confidence with food and your body. For this reason, I have reopened my group coaching program, Peace with Food and Soul, a 4-month immersive space where you get to finally shed food and body guilt for good. I have dozens of testimonials from happy clients who will never spend another cent on diet culture solutions because they have created health, mind, body, and soul from the inside out in this program. Check out the show notes for a link to more information if joining a small community who gets you is just what you need to accelerate your journey. Okay, back to the show. Okay, and we're back. We just wrapped up talking about stage two, the exploration stage. And if you were with me, this is where a lot of clients I work with tend to get stuck, right? They tend to get stuck here and they think, oh, this isn't working, or it's working way too well and I'm giving myself way too much permission to eat and that's backfiring on me, right? So this is a stage where I see a lot of women giving up and going back to diet culture. They just say, this is not for me, okay? And as I mentioned, moving from stage one to stage two, in many cases, we do need to surround ourselves with support. Okay. Support can go a long ways, whether that's support with someone like myself who works my Peace with Food and Soul method in a group setting or individually. You can also find support through healthcare providers, free Facebook groups. You know, there's all kinds of different ways and different solutions to accessing support, but finding it can be crucial for your journey. I'd also like to put a little plug in here for my colleague and very good friend, Tammy Lance's Intuitive Life Journal. It's actually a journal that you can purchase. You can find it on Amazon or her website, which I will put in the show notes. But it's a journal that helps you do a lot of reflection over your eating, over your life, over what's going on. So you can start to put the pieces of the puzzle together to learn more about the diet rebel, to understand the thoughts that are coming up around food or around your body that are feeling challenging to deal with. And it guides you step by step through journal prompts and pages to really support you in that self-realization so that you can move from stage two to stage three. So if you're not really ready to work with an individual such as myself, or you're not quite ready to join a group to support you, you might check out Tammy's Intuitive Life Journal. It's just a self-guided way that you can also get over the hump. Okay. But stage three is a stage that where intuitive eating starts to feel better. And this is the stage I'm really trying to help my clients access more of the time. This stage is called crystallization. And this is where it becomes the only path. This is where intuitive eating is like its end all be all. This is the direction we're going. We're no longer feeling that strong pull back to diet culture. And we see the value of not going back to dieting. You know, we might not feel like intuitive eating is super easy, but it is when the practices of intuitive eating start to solidify. They start to become more autopilot. They're more instinctive, and we can actually begin and just begin in stage three to balance our eating habits. We might start to look at the last principle of intuitive eating, gentle nutrition. We are letting go of that diet rebel. The diet rebel no longer has her grip on us, and we're able to say, when I eat this food or this meal, I feel this way and I like it, so I'm going to eat that way more, or I don't like it, so I'm going to make some changes and shifts next time I have a meal, right? We're starting to learn through our body what foods are good for us and what foods may not be of great service to us. And in this stage, we're also less consumed with how to eat intuitively, and it starts to become just the side effect. We honor our hunger most of the time, and we're still continuing to make peace with food. We're discerning more easily between biological hunger and emotional hunger. So those senses are getting a lot stronger. We started to cultivate them in stage two, but they're just getting more easy. Now, there's a couple barriers in this stage, okay? And I see a lot of women in this stage and they do really well. Side note, you can actually move up and down the stages. So you can be in stage three, crystallization, and you can drop back to stage two. It can happen. And you can go, I don't think people go all the way up to stage five and then fall back to stage two, but I do see people vacillate between stage two and stage three. And it's because there's life happening, right? Life is always lifing on us. And I see that in stage three, although we're feeling like, yep, intuitive eating's that it's the thing that I'm going to do. It's the thing that's right for me. We can still feel pulled back to diet culture solutions around certain individuals or around certain times of the year, most notably the holidays, right? We're doing pretty good most of the time, honoring our hunger and fullness. All of a sudden, the holidays come around and it's like there's good food everywhere, and it can feel like we go a little out of control with certain types of foods at that time of the year. So it's like, ooh, crystallization all of a sudden becomes less concrete when we're in those moments of time. In addition, I see this oftentimes where there's certain individuals that pull us away from our intuitive eating pursuits, right? Like a caregiver who maybe fat shamed us or picked apart our body when we were growing up. If we see them or have to spend any significant period of time with them, it can make us feel really unsure of ourselves. Maybe those conversations come up and they throw us off our game a little bit and they make us question, oh, is this really the right path, right? That's okay. This is not a problem. There are lots of ways to overcome these barriers. But I do notice that in stage three, when somebody is feeling pretty good, like they're like, yeah, I'm doing really good, these are the things that kind of pull them away, right? These events, these individuals. And it's usually temporary, especially if that person has surrounded themselves with the right kinds of support. But I'm just saying, it happens. It's life. It's not a big deal. It doesn't have to be a big deal. But it is important that even in stage three, even when the concepts of intuitive eating are starting to concretize in your body, right? You do need to continue surrounding yourself with the right people and the right support, the right healthcare providers, etc. And I do invite people in stage three to continue working with an intuitive eating counselor or a therapist or someone that supports them because of these, you know, people or events that can kind of pull them away from their journey with intuitive eating, right? Because we can go from stage three back to stage two, back to stage one, and then go back to diet culture. It doesn't happen often, but it is something to be aware of. So let's move on to stage four and stage five. These stages have fewer barriers. These are the stages where the intuitive eater starts to really activate. She turns on inside of us, and going backwards becomes less likely. This is the place I like to take my clients, to stage four and ideally stage five. So let's move into those now. Stage four is considered the awakening. This is where our food choices become natural and we really begin to trust, operative word, trust ourselves with food. There's a diminishing focus on our external appearance and more emphasis on our inner values with health and with life. This is the stage where the clients I work with look at me and they say, you know, Beth, this wasn't even about food, was it? This was about so much more. Now that I have my mental rent is not taken up by obsessive thoughts about food and my body, I can actually pursue the things that are important to me. I even had a client work with me and she didn't even know it was available to her because she'd been so consumed by food. And when she got to stage four, she realized that her life purpose was to open her own business and become an entrepreneur. And to this day, she is killing it. She is doing a great job with her business, but she would have never had space and room for that had she not moved through these stages of intuitive eating. We also in this stage start to choose more nutrient-dense foods naturally because we notice that we feel better when we make those choices. And it doesn't come from the motivation of, oh, if I eat the carrots and broccoli, I'll lose weight and be healthy. It's I eat the carrots and broccoli because I feel really good when I choose those foods. Chocolate starts taking on the same emotional connotation as a peach. That's what Evelyn Tribbley says in the book, Intuitive Eating. Okay, so we start to really level that playing field. Sometimes chocolate is the perfect thing to satisfy our needs. Other times that peach is. There's not a right or wrong, and there's no need to test ourselves anymore. There's no deprivation backlash, right? All of that diet rebel voice is gone. We might see it pop up a little bit here and there, but we call it out immediately and we're able to move into thought processes that serve us. We've created an identity that we are an intuitive eater and we get to love ourselves right here, right now. We don't have to change our body. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to get to a certain level on the scale. We get to be free because we choose to be free. It becomes a decision. It's no longer a bridge we have to cross. It's just who we are. And because of that, our food talk and our self-talk look and feel a lot more positive. We're able to process, metabolize, alchemize our feelings with a lot more ease. This is the awakening stage, and it's a beautiful place in the intuitive eating process. Now, of course, you can vacillate. You can go back to stage three. But it's less likely, at least in my experience, when a client, and including myself, I was my own client at a time, when I found this stage, it really, really made it clear that I was never going back to dieting, ever, ever, ever. And while I still, you know, maybe picked apart my body here and there, it didn't take up my entire mental space anymore. It was there, but I didn't try to change it. I didn't try to tell it to go away. I just saw it for what it was and let it move through my body, right? All right, let's move to stage five. There's not as many barriers in stage four and stage five, so I'm not going to address those. But stage five is the final stage of intuitive eating. Treasure the pleasure. Trust in stage five is the name of the game. In this stage, you easily resist external pressures and fully identify as an intuitive eater. It is just who you are. If someone asks you, oh, what's your eating pattern? Oh, I'm an eater. I'm an intuitive eater. I listen to my body, right? You're not pressured by external forces. You don't feel pressure when you go over to a friend's house and she's like, eat this, eat this, eat this. You can easily say, no, thank you, or thank you. Yes, I'd love some, right? There's no external pressure from social media. You don't click on clickbait anymore and say, ooh, maybe if this intuitive eating thing doesn't work out, then I'll do this program, right? There's no more compulsion to ever, ever go back to dieting. And as a result of that, food and body become easy for you because those default settings that you were born with have been reactivated. You have this inner conviction around letting go of food as your primary coping tool. And eating becomes a source of pleasure rather than this affliction that you've been dealing with your entire life. I mean, doesn't that sound nice? Eating is a source of pleasure, not an affliction. I mean, that is so powerful. And we didn't talk about it a lot about exercise or movement in the stages, but in stage five, you'll also probably witness and notice that exercise is more enticing because of how it benefits you physically, mentally, and emotionally. It's no longer driven by how many calories did I burn in this workout, or I better get those steps in or else. It becomes something you crave. You want to be outside. You want to, you know, do a yoga flow. I don't know, whatever movement makes you feel joy and pleasure, but it's driven from this internal place of satisfaction. And those concerns that you had in the earlier stages of this process about weight diminish. And you're able to focus on the other qualities that you have that make you unique, of being worthy, of being seen and being loved, that make you attractive. Oftentimes, you know, this pursuit of weight loss, we think, oh, I'm going to be more attractive when I lose the 30 pounds. But isn't it ironic that when we let these concerns diminish and we focus on these other qualities we've had this entire time, and we really turn up the volume on those, we start to see them for what they are. Wow, I'm an amazing person because, and we have a list now of things that bring us joy, but also are evidence that we're worthy because we exist, not because we're wearing a certain pant size. Okay, so those are the five stages. I hope that through listening to this, you were able to discover where you are on your intuitive eating journey and maybe give you a little bit of inspiration to where you might want to go. Because if I know one thing is true, it's this. No matter what stage you're on, if you have the desire in your heart, you can and you will make it to stage five. I've been in stage five now for over a decade. And I was just on a walk with my mom earlier and I was telling her, wow, how far I've come. Because before I found intuitive eating, I was obsessed with food. I was terrified of weight gain. I would do anything to keep that number down so that I could be happy, right? Little did I know that happiness starts on the inside. This process is in many ways not even about the food. It's about our relationship to the food. It's about our relationship to ourselves. It's about breaking down those barriers that have been standing in our way, those oppressive barriers that have been standing in our way for not only our lifetime, but for generations of women that stood before you. Your mothers, your grandmothers, your everybody that came before you, they were oppressed, being told that their body had to look a certain way, be a certain size in order to be valued. This stage five, stage four too, this is where we really disconnect from that. And we say, no more. We put our foot down and we say, look, this, I'm no longer available for this oppression around body size, for this idea that my body size gets to dictate my pursuit of health, my pursuit of joy, my pursuit of happiness. And we allow ourselves to nourish on a deeper level, not just by counting macros or calories, but by listening to those internal cues of the body that are so wise, by learning to process those emotions so that we don't get stuck in thought loops and obsessive ideas that, you know, we have to fix our broken body. We learn that we are whole because we are we, right? We learn that we are perfect because we are alive. And this might sound like a Hallmark greeting card, and if it does, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little cheesy here, but I'm sincere about the path, and I'm sincere about these stages, and I'm sincere that you can have treasure the pleasure as your final end game. So if you're asking yourself, what's the end game? If I'm not pursuing weight as the end all be all, consider these stages. Stage five is where you will arrive. And once you hit stage five, I'm telling you, the chances of backtracking are slim to none. And I can say that with complete confidence because that's been my own personal experience. So we'll wrap it up here. If you're in the earlier stages of intuitive eating and it feels hard, you're not alone. But by knowing the stage you are in and understanding some of the barriers and maybe considering some of the solutions that I provided in this episode, I hope that it gives you the confidence that this too can be something that you overcome. And by using the right tools, you'll get there faster. And lastly, stage 5 is available to anyone who wants it. All right, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for taking your time to listen. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much for listening in today. I am so grateful. If you enjoyed this podcast, I ask that you share it with a friend who might also benefit. And if you want even more support on your food and body journey, please check the show notes for information about my free Facebook group and private coaching opportunities. See you next time.